Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, fj@offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first released as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime between 2 and 10 years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on April 3rd of 2011 under the headline, Bungling Burglar Skunked in Corvallis Courthouse Job. Here we go. The robbers and burglars who have made Oregon history have not always been the smartest guys on the block. Perhaps that's just because the smart ones never made history, that is, got caught, but there does seem to be a special thickness about Oregon's pioneer criminals. Take, for instance, the Dotremont brothers, who in 1923 pulled off history's last great train robbery and then left a dry cleaner's claim check with a name on it at the scene. And then there's Harry Tracy, the last of the Wild West era outlaws, famously described by Stuart Holbrook as a garden variety idiot who was known for breaking out of jails. Of course, to get good at breaking out of jails, one has to be pretty bad at avoiding getting thrown into them in the first place. But one of the more amusing stories of early Oregon morons in the news, with a tip of the hat there to the Bob and Sherry radio show, came out of Corvallis, the seat of Benton County. It all started on the evening of April 4th, 1909. Frank Clayton and George Davis, two local fellows in their late 30s, had big plans for the night. A week or two earlier, Clayton and Davis had successfully burgled a jewelry store in the town of Peoria, just up the river, and had gotten away with some very nice things. A journey to a few pawn shops in Portland had turned many of those nice things into a pocket full of lovely money, although, of course, hitting a pawn shop with an entire jewelry store's worth of stuff was bound to raise suspicions. So most of the loot was still squirreled away. The robbers had a nice hiding spot underneath of a nearby church. The newspaper report says Oak Grove Church, which might have referred to the Oakville Presbyterian Church, which is just 2 miles away from Peoria in a particularly quiet part of the valley. Clayton kept one particularly nice watch for himself as his personal timepiece. That watch was no doubt in his pocket on the night of April 4th, as he and Davis got ready for their next big heist. They were going to break into the Benton County Courthouse, blow the door off the treasurer's vault, and help themselves to the treasure. Of course there would be treasure. Why else would Benton County need a treasurer? So, sometime after midnight, the two brazenly entered the courthouse through the front door, breaking the lock to get in, and then hustled straight to the treasurer's office. In the treasurer's office, they arrived at the vault, a large and promising-looking walk-in safe. This was something the boys knew what to do with. They drilled a hole in the door above the combo lock, stuck a stick of dynamite in, lit the fuse, and, one assumes, plugged their ears. A couple seconds later, they were in the vault. As a side note, it's amazing how much life in Oregon has changed in a little over 100 years. If someone lit off a stick of dynamite in the middle of the night downtown in any Oregon city today, the 911 call center would be flooded with phone calls from anxious neighbors. But according to the Corvallis Gazette newspaper the next day, quote, no special significance was then attached to the noise. Deep in the heart of the courthouse, Clayton and Davis were discovering that there wasn't much special significance attached to the vault in the treasurer's office either. They were ransacking the place, throwing ledgers and papers around in a quest for the sacks of money that just had to be there but somehow weren't. They did find a little. The treasurer was holding some smallish amounts of cash and some jewelry for safekeeping, the lion's share of which was a $200 stash belonging to the Woodman of the World. The two disappointed burglars hastily appropriated these little sums and headed for the banks of the Willamette. At the river, they climbed into a small skiff which they had stolen earlier that night from one of the local waterfront mills and started a starlit paddle down the rain-swollen Willamette River, destination Albany, and points north. A couple of weeks went by. A reward was announced, $200 for information leading to the thieves. Then the reward was claimed by the local chief of police, who had journeyed to Portland and arrested Clayton and Davis. Today, of course, this could never happen. If it's your job to catch crooks, typically you don't get cash bonuses from grateful citizens for doing your job. But perhaps Chief Wells was a special case. The Gazette gushed about the job he'd done. Quote, "When the burglary was committed, it was thought that no trace had been left by the robbers, but Chief Wells found a slight clue, and this he followed like a born sleuth," the paper raved. "Chief Wells deserves the highest praise for the really capable manner in which he handled this case. With only the faintest possible clue, he traced the thieves from the scene of the crime." So, what was this faintest possible clue? The Gazette doesn't say. Luckily, its competitor, the Benton County Republican, does. Wells found claim stubs from those Portland pawn shops lying around the burglars' abandoned campsite. Clayton and Davis had doltishly thrown them away before leaving camp the night after their getaway. Wells arrested the two men on the streets of Portland and hauled them home to Corvallis in chains. The watch in Clayton's pocket was a nice bonus because it was easily identified as coming from the Peoria jewelry store. Taxed with that, the two confessed and led the cops to the rest of their stash at Oak Grove Church. They drew sentences of 5 years each. As for Wells, he duly filed his claim for the $200 and was granted the cash. But what's especially interesting about this is there was another claimant too, a fellow named N. Solomon from Portland. We know nothing about Mr. Solomon other than his name, which sounds distinctly Jewish. Jewish people at that time in history often sought careers in retail shop ownership and moneylending. Is it possible that Mr. Solomon was a pawn shop owner? Was he the guy who whispered to Wells, "Those are the guys right there," perhaps as they were walking into his shop to pawn more stolen goods? Maybe he was cooperating with Wells as pawn shop owners cooperate with all law enforcement officers, never dreaming that this particular one was moonlighting as a bounty hunter, leaving the city he'd sworn to protect in pursuit of a personal cash windfall. And if Solomon was the shop owner, was he left holding the bag when all that stolen jewelry was returned to its rightful owner in Peoria? We'll probably never know. If I'm right about this, there were some people on the scene that didn't want anyone to find out. I want to give a special thanks to Benton County historian Bill McCash for turning me on to this story. Key sources in this article included articles from the Corvallis Gazette and Benton County Republican, published in 1909, collected by Benton County historian Bill McCash. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 550 stories, originally created and published as newspaper columns and subsequently podcasts in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers H.P. Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, Algernon Blackwood, Edgar Rice Burroughs, the great ones. For details, please see pulp-lit.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0, which basically means you can do anything you want to with the content. Copy it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, turn it into a tweet storm, whatever you like, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. For full details, see offbeatoregon.com/CC. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday morning, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you even miss it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.